From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. For New York Mets fans, 1986 was a glorious year.
And the Sox are down to their last strike, and this crowd is really ready to reach the heavens now. Got it!
The Mets won an epic seven-game World Series against the Boston Red Sox, and millions turned out for a raucous parade through Lower Manhattan the next day.
They flowed over police lines and crushed cars in an effort to see and touch Gary Carter and Keith Hernandez and Lenny Dykstra and Mookie Wilson and the rest of the Mets.
One name conspicuously absent from that list, Dwight Gooden, the Mets' 21-year-old star pitcher with a blistering fastball and nasty curve. Where was he? Not riding triumphantly through the Canyon of Heroes. He was alone in his apartment with the curtains closed, flattened after a sleepless night spent snorting cocaine and drinking in a sketchy housing project. That's how Dwight Gooden's book, Doc, A Memoir, begins, and that moment highlights a life and career of stunning highs and harrowing lows. Dwight Gooden joins me now from our New York bureau. Mr. Gooden, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about the high points of your career and then talk about how far you fell. You joined the Mets at age 19. You're named Rookie of the Year. You win the Cy Young Award at 20, along with pitching's Triple Crown, and then at 21, you win the World Series, and you describe a billboard in Times Square from the time, 100 feet tall. You're the whole side of a building in Times Square. I mean, to say that you were a hero in New York City doesn't even really begin to capture it, I think.
It was great. At the time, looking back now, I wish I could have enjoyed it more when I was going through it. My rookie year in 1984, the expectations weren't really as high until after the All-Star break, so I was able to enjoy that season. 85, it was a game, but it was also business where it was almost like I was an entertainer, where you're out there, everybody's there, there's a Pike House to see you. So a lot of times when we scored a couple of runs early, it didn't matter to me if we scored any more runs. I just felt like I wanted to be out on the mound as often as I possibly can because I felt like it was my show that night, and I really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, in 86 is when the expectations became more than I can really handle. For example, if I won a game, you know, 1-0, complete game, shutout. But if I only had 3 strikeouts, the first question would be after the game was, what happened? You only had 3 strikeouts. So my next game, I would go out there and try to get 10 strikeouts, pitch a complete game, and pitch a shutout. It just became too overwhelming at that time.
Well, this is the time in 1986 when you say you became a cocaine addict. At your worst point, how much coke were you doing?
Way too much. Basically, I guess, always went on bends where I would be up for 3 days basically doing cocaine nonstop. That was a lot of cocaine, and luckily my heart didn't explode.
Your heart didn't explode. That's quite a thing to say.
Yes, I'm very fortunate that it didn't explode, and I still feel I'm here for a purpose, and that's part of the reason why I want to do this book. It's great therapy for myself and to help others who may be going through similar situations that I went through or may have a family member or friend that may be going through different situations.
You know, over the years, the list of your run-ins with the law is huge. There was a brawl with the police, an accusation of rape. You were arrested for punching your girlfriend in the face. You fled a traffic stop. You did 7 months in prison for violating probation by using cocaine. And then just a couple of years ago, you were arrested and you faced a long list of charges after a car accident with your 5-year-old son sitting in the back seat. And you say in the book that you'd been doing cocaine and then you took a bunch of Ambien and you were dozing and driving off the road. For fans who idolized you all those years in New York, why should they look at you now and have anything to admire?
I think the main thing that I'm being honest, I'm standing up, I'm admitting one of my mistakes. It's on their time to forgive me or if they want to forgive me. Now it's not about me just talking about recovery, but actually living recovery and doing things to help others.
I'm talking with Dwight Gooden about his memoir titled Doc. Mr. Gooden, you talk a lot in the book about your father, who had dreams of becoming a pitcher himself, right? And there's one high point in your career amid all of the drug abuse. This is in 1996. It was a point when your dad was really sick. He was about to go in for open heart surgery. At the time, you're playing for the Yankees. And let's take a listen to some tape here.
Lifted in the air, in the infield. Derek Jeter waiting, makes the catch.
a no-hitter for Dwight Gooden.
I mean, I tell you, that was an amazing night for myself and my dad. That was like our last baseball memory we had together. My dad was very ill at the time, and I was supposed to fly home to be with him the night that I pitched a no-hitter. When I woke up that morning, looking in the mirror after brushing my teeth, all I can remember is the time we spent on the baseball field, all the drills we put me through, all in Saturdays we spent watching baseball games and listening to games on the radio. And something just came across me that he would probably want me to pitch. So after the no-hitter, when I flew home, he did see the game. When I got home, he was on life support. And the doctors told me he saw the game. And after the last out, he had a tear in his eye. I remember giving him that ball. He never made it home from the hospital. He ended up passing away. But the last game he actually saw me pitch was the no-hitter.
I'm sure there were lots of bittersweet moments for you, because as proud as your parents must have been of what you did, you knew they were also deeply ashamed of your troubles, your addiction, and your suspensions.
Yeah, it was like a roller coaster ride through my career and for my life off the field. I remember in 1987 when I was going to rehab when the Mets got me and I tested positive. I remember coming home and telling my parents. My mom was actually happy that I was getting help because she knew up until that point something was going wrong. My dad, I knew I had crushed him and hurt him real bad. He just kind of dropped his head. Now my relationship with my mom is better than probably ever could have been.
How much do you think she trusts you now?
She trusts me a lot more now than, say, a year ago. And I said because she still has all my rings and my jewelry locked up in her safe, and I don't know the combination.
Wait, she keeps your rings, your jewelry, your World Series rings too, right, locked up?
Yes, she's got it all locked up in her safe, and she has this room where she keeps all my all my awards and stuff, but all the jewelry she keeps locked up, yes.
Why does she keep it locked up?
Like my mom, she's been a part of Al-Anon, and just from the story she's heard about, you know, addicts pawning a jewelry to get drugs.
That's interesting. So it's something that she's still holding on to. She's sending you a little message there.
Yes, and she got every right to.
And you say you've been sober now for what, about 2 years?
2 years. March make 2 years.
Mm-hmm. You've had, of course, a lot of chances before, a lot of recoveries before that have been blown. You've relapsed. You must think that people now, even if they're pulling for you, are thinking, you know, why should we believe him now? Why will this time be any different?
And that's still right because, of, like you just said, from my track record, and I can't guarantee what's going to happen next week or next year. It's a lifelong commitment. And I'm in it now. I feel good about myself. I have peace within myself. And the main thing is I don't carry the guilt and the shame that I had before that kept leading back to, you know, self-destruction. So, you know, everything's great today. And that's all I can guarantee is that I'm clean and sober today.
Dwight Gooden, his memoir written with Ellis Hennekin is titled Doc. Mr. Gooden, thanks very much.
All right. Thank you.